This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne. In the 2000 election, Dick Cheney was the steady voice of experience on the Republican ticket, the man meant to reassure anyone worried about the relative inexperience of then-Governor George W. Bush. NPR's Nina Totenberg already has spent time with Democratic vice presidential candidate John Edwards. Today, she profiles Dick Cheney and his new role on the Republican ticket.
In this campaign, Dick Cheney is the hitman whose task is to discredit the Democratic presidential candidate. It's an assignment he's carried out with a monotoned zeal.
These are not times for leaders who shift with the political winds, saying one thing one day and another the next.
On any campaign day, Cheney spends more than half his stump speech attacking John Kerry's fitness to be president. He does it directly.
His back and forth reflects a habit of indecision and sends a message of confusion.
And he does it indirectly by suggesting Kerry is a pushover.
This is not an enemy we can reason with or negotiate with or appease.
He does it with seemingly orchestrated responses from an audience that's usually by invitation only, as he did in Parkersburg, West Virginia.
On November 2nd, America faces a choice between a strong and steadfast president and his opponent, who seems to adopt a new position every day.
And in Reno, Nevada.
The president of the United States must be clear and consistent. But in all the national campaigns I've watched up close, I've never seen a candidate go back and forth so many times on a single issue.
While the Democrats' John Edwards spends almost all his stump speech on the economy, Cheney focuses his speech on the terrorist threat, the war in Iraq, and the character of the man who will lead this country in these perilous times. On one occasion earlier this month in Iowa, he even suggested that if Kerry wins, the country will be attacked.
It's absolutely essential that 8 weeks from today, on November 2nd, we make the right choice. Because if we make the wrong choice, then the danger is that we'll be hit in a way that will be devastating from the standpoint of the United States, and that we'll.
Within days, Cheney backpedaled on the statement. But in truth, it's only marginally more harsh than what he says every day. What he says is covered most often by local newspapers and TV stations in the rural areas to which he devotes most of his campaign time. The national press has had a hard time following Cheney. In a break with tradition, the vice president has repeatedly refused to allow a variety of national news organizations to travel with him. In an article in the New York Times entitled Desperately Seeking Cheney, reporter Rick Lyman detailed his attempt to follow the Cheney campaign by traveling on commercial airlines instead of on the vice president's plane, as is usually the custom. Lyman wrote that in his pursuit of Cheney, he began to feel like a stalker.
It just felt like I was chasing after this traveling circus that I was always a few steps behind.
The Times is not the only news organization that so far has not made it onto the Cheney plane. Among others, NPR and Knight Ridder, a newspaper chain with a readership of more than 12 million, and a track record of some tough reporting on Iraq. John Walcott, the Washington bureau chief for Knight Ridder, says the vice president's staff has made it as difficult as possible for the national media to cover Cheney.
There is a natural tension between any political candidate and the media. The candidate has a message that he or she is trying to deliver. The media tries to vet that message, fact-check it, truth-squad it. Less so, generally, with the local media, who are not as immersed in national and international affairs, and therefore less prone to asking rude questions.
Other Washington bureau chiefs have privately speculated that the campaign has another motive, in effect blacklisting those organizations or reporters that it has become displeased with. But the Cheney campaign says it rotates reporters and camera crews through the 6 seats it's allocated to the press on the vice president's plane. The campaign also said this week that the vice president did not have time for an interview for this broadcast. Regardless of motive, Vice President Cheney's decision to so severely limit press access to his campaign inevitably refocuses attention on his role in the administration as the chief architect and spokesman for limiting information to the public. From the outset, when he chaired the president's task force on energy policy, Cheney refused to disclose what role energy executives played in developing that policy. As he put it in an interview on Fox News Sunday nearly 3 years ago,
"What's really at stake here is the ability of the president and the vice president to solicit advice from anybody they want in confidence."
In the end, Cheney went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court in an effort not to disclose the information. An inconclusive high court ruling last June ensured that the information would not be made public by the time of the election, if ever. This has been a hard year for Vice President Cheney. He was perhaps the biggest proponent of the war in Iraq inside the administration. News accounts later accused him of cherry-picking intelligence information to make the case that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, and he repeatedly linked Saddam to Al-Qaeda and 9/11. In the end, there were no weapons of mass destruction found. Every congressional and independent committee that's examined the question has found no link between Saddam and 9/11. And the vice president's public predictions that American troops would be greeted as liberators in Iraq have a bitter taste today. To make matters worse, he's being hammered by the Democrats for his connections to Halliburton, the giant conglomerate he headed until 2000. Last week, the Kerry campaign introduced a television ad suggesting a connection between deferred pay Cheney received from Halliburton and the no-bid contracts awarded to Halliburton in Iraq.
I have no financial interest in Halliburton of any kind and haven't had now for over 3 years.
The truth? As Vice President, Dick Cheney received $2 million from Halliburton. Halliburton got billions in no-bid contracts in Iraq.
Halliburton's contracts in Iraq have catapulted the company from number 19 on the Pentagon's list of contractors in 2002 to the number one position in 2003. But Cheney has vociferously denied that he had anything to do with awarding contracts to Halliburton or any other company. And he says the $2 million was deferred compensation from his time as CEO at Halliburton. Cheney was apparently still smarting from what he considered unfair Democratic charges over Halliburton when he famously refused to shake hands with Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy on the Senate floor last June. Using the F word, the vice president told Leahy what he should do to himself. Afterwards, in an interview on Fox News, he was unapologetic.
And I informed him of my view of his conduct in no uncertain terms, and as I say, I felt better afterwards.
The episode seemed an uncharacteristically emotional response from a man who usually epitomizes control. But if Cheney resented what he considers the half-truths and unfair inferences made by the Democrats about him, they see him as unfair, as in this charge he repeats every day.
But then when it came time to vote for funds that would provide our fighting men and women with body armor, ammunition, jet fuel, and spare parts, Senators Kerry and Edwards voted no.
Senator Kerry responds that he did vote to provide all those things, but that he supported a bill that would have paid for it by reducing some tax cuts. The bill he voted against, he notes, is the same one that President Bush at one point threatened to veto. Cheney stays on the attack on social issues, too. He's a cheerleader against gun control, against abortion, but not against gay rights. This year he acknowledged for the first time that one of his daughters is a lesbian.
Lynn and I have a gay daughter, so it's an issue that our family is very familiar with. We have two daughters, and we have enormous pride in both of them.
So what about a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage? Cheney has the same position today that he did in 2000. Leave it to the states.
My own preference is as I've stated, but the president makes basic policy for the administration.
It is a rare moment of disagreement with the president, and one that a proud father easily gets away with even in front of a socially conservative audience. It is also a disagreement that helps to soften the edges of the Bush-Cheney ticket with moderates. And it is a rare moment these days when Dick Cheney helps to soften the image of the Bush administration. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.